Piles of garbage were heaped to the surrounding hillsides on our right, and, as Double Tough, another of my deputies, would have said, the unfettered smells were bad enough to gag a maggot off a gut wagon. All in all, it looked pretty much how I was beginning to feel. The Basco caught up but kept a hand over his mouth and nose. "How about I stay in the truck?" I shook my head.
"Nuh-uh."
I waited for a response, but there wasn't any. "If this is your last 2 weeks, then you're going to be the primary on this one." He sighed, and his shoulders shrugged a little as he stuffed the small evidence kit under his arm. "It's freezing. How come we don't just drive the rest of the way in?" "Because I've already lost 2 tires to scrap metal and wayward drywall screws in this place, and I'm not about to lose another." I flipped the collar up on my coat and stuffed my gloved hands even deeper into my pockets. The High Plains was a place of extremes with a people of extremes. Most of my work involved the sentient and venal aspects of human nature, but even with the wet and the real, we generally didn't get body parts. As we walked toward the hill, there was a cracking sound from the road that led to the dump's interior. Sergeant Vittoria looked in the direction of the noise and then back to me. "Are those shots?" There was more than a little concern in his voice. "Yep, the 22, I'd say." He picked up his pace, and I followed along like a one-man posse. I'd gone about 3 steps when I remembered Dog. He was still watching Butch and Sundance. "Hey!" He looked at me, back to them, and then followed. I nudged him with my leg. "What are you, a tough guy?" When we got over the hill, it was as I'd expected. Geo Stewart, Durant Memorial Hospital patient-at-large, was dispatching rats with a Savage automatic varmint rifle at an alarming rate. At least, I assumed it was rats. He turned to prop the stock on his knee so that he could remove the tiny magazine, gave us a brief nod of his head to indicate that he was aware of our presence, and then scooped a handful of rounds from his stained and tattered Carhartt.
"Hey, Sheriff, long time no see."
Evidently, the shoulder wasn't bothering him. "Hey, Geo." He studied my face as we got closer.
"Something wrong with your eyes?"
I pushed my sunglasses farther up onto my nose, effectively covering the twin saucers of my pupils.
"What are you shooting, Geo?"
He went back to thumbing 22 longs into the spring clip of the rifle's magazine.
"Damnable rats. Found one of them in the cooler trying to run off with the finger I told you about."
His chest-length beard was zipped into his coat.
"A adjuster came up here a few months ago and said that if I didn't do something, they'd cancel the insurance. Goddamn insurance."
Sancho pulled the collar of his jacket up as a makeshift filter since the wind had shifted, and we were now getting the full, odoriferous impact of the surroundings.
"Jesus."
The Euskadi eyes leveled with the junkman's.
"How do you get used to the smell?"
Geo eyed him without irony, and then moved off with the words,
"What smell?"
It was a 2-gallon styrofoam cooler, one of the cheap ones that you can pick up at any service station in the summer season and then listen to it squeak to the point of homicidal dementia. It was sitting on the top of a toppled old avocado-colored refrigerator from the 70s. The cooler must have been relatively new, however, because it had a barcode sticker on the side. I didn't take my hands out of my pockets.
"So is the fickle finger of fate in this?"
Geo nodded, and he, Dog, and I looked at the Basco.
"Okay, fine."
Sizer Vittoria stepped up and plucked the top from the cooler, the vacuum pressure causing it to shiver as he lifted. He stood there for a moment, craning his neck for another perspective, and then closed it.
"It's not a finger."
I could tell the effects of the drops were beginning to fade as I looked at Geo, who was starting to protest. Santiago raised a hand.
"It's part of a thumb."
I stepped in, and the Basco obliged me by lifting the lid again. The thumb was lodged in a thin skim of ice, along with a little dirt and a couple of crushed Olympia beer cans. I made a show of pulling my hands from my pockets, then holding them up like a fighter pilot for review.
"Not mine."
Geo went as far as to present his 2 thumbs, and we both turned toward Sizer Pretoria, who refused to play the game. It was fresh and of prodigious size, almost as large as my own. Mottled with a whitish cast, the separated end was crushed
and gave no impression of having been surgically removed. It was going to be hard to get a print.
Mail. Santiago nodded.
Yeah.
What do you figure? Tabasco took a deep breath and immediately regretted it.
A day, maybe two. But as cold as it's been, it could be longer.
I nodded. Maybe it just froze off somebody.
He pulled an evidence bag from his kit along with a pair of plastic gloves, which he stretched with a bellows of air from his lungs. He stuffed his leather gloves in his jacket pocket and then snapped the latex ones over his hands. He set the cooler top to the side and reached in to gingerly take the digit from the filthy ice. Then he placed it in the evidence bag, zipped it shut, replaced the cooler top, and wedged the entirety under his arm. I'll check the barcode with local merchants, interview the medicos to see if anybody had a thumb removed or was treated for any like injury. I'll also check the NCIC fingerprint bank, but it's mangled, so you're going to be lucky if you get even a partial hit.
I nodded. You going to set a grid and check the scene?
He looked at the darkening sky. You've got to be kidding.
You never know.
Sancho turned to Gio with a resigned dip of his head and spread his hands. Gio blinked like a white-tailed deer and cupped the rifle in a two-palmed hammock like an Indian would have. There was an Indian air about Gio, or maybe it was a mountain man quality. Some people live on the high plains because they can't live anywhere else, their antennae fixed to a frequency that is preset to offense. Once in a long while they venture into town and drink and argue too much. Like fine instruments of delicate temperament rarely played, they become untuned and discordant. I had arrested Gio only once in my career, for drunk and disorderly, when his grandson had gotten married 6 months ago. They disappeared over the next hill, and I walked back toward the truck with Dog. I could hear the sound of a diesel motor coming from the front gate and echoing off the hills like a skipping stone as I hiked back toward the main entrance. A top-of-the-line, deep-green Chevrolet that proclaimed Red Hills Rancho Arroyo on the doors was pulling a gleaming dump trailer, pinstriped the same color, up to the gate. I looked around for Duane, then walked over. Ozzie Dobbs, Jr. was undersized and overly cheery, smiling with small, square teeth that looked like Italian tile. He was wearing a large cattleman-style hat, and a green-checkered cowboy scarf was tied at his throat with a square knot and not the usual buckaroo one the cowboys in these parts preferred. The window whirred, and I noticed he let it down enough to be heard, but not enough to let the cold or stink in. "Uh-oh, what's the problem, officer?" I patted my leg again for Dog to follow and carefully picked my way to the side of the shiny truck. Oh, an unidentified individual may have dropped down on the evolutionary scale. I leaned on the window, tipped my hat back, and smiled at Ozzie's mother, who was in the passenger seat. "Hello, Mrs. Dobbs." Betty Dobbs was approaching 80, but was still a looker with a fine bone structure that had held up to the years and sad eyes which made you want to tell her anything she wanted to hear. She had been my ninth-grade English civics teacher, and at the time I'd considered her a harpy. Now retired, she was known to volunteer for every civic organization imaginable, from the county animal shelter to the Friends of the Library and the Hospital Auxiliary. "Hello, Sheriff. It's a lovely evening, isn't it?" Evidently the smell and the cold hadn't invaded the cab yet. "Yes, ma'am." I looked around again for the younger steward, but only the dogs were in the office. "Got your water bill, Ozzie?" He grudgingly pulled the yellow slip from the seat, but held onto it. "Yeah, I've got the damn thing, but I gotta tell you, Sheriff, I got about three more loads, and I was hoping you fellas would cut me some slack." I glanced back at his covered trailer. "Well, I understand you've already dumped one load today. What have you got back here?" He stared at me for a second, probably wondering where I'd gotten my information. "Mostly brush I clear-cut from down by Wallace Creek." "All right." I glanced back toward Dump Central, where I'd last seen Santiago and the solid waste facility engineer. "I'm not sure where Duane is or where Gio's going to want you to put it, but you better back up and run it through the scale." He sighed. "I will, but then the commissar's going to want to charge me. I don't want to say anything against anybody, but you give some people a little power, and it goes straight to their head." He gave an apologetic glance to his mother and then started in again. I have yet to come up here and not have that old bastard go through every load I bring into this place. You'd think I was trying to drop off nuclear waste.
I held up a hand, but it had little effect.
Now, he knows I've lobbied the county to shut this place down and move it a little farther out, and that's a fight I'm going to win, but as to that private junkyard of his...
Ozzy. His face reddened, but he continued.
The amount of ground seepage, antifreeze, transmission fluid, gasoline, and oil that comes off this hill and down into Rancho Arroyo would be a disgrace to any government agency. And I can tell you that I'm not above making a few phone calls and turning this into a Superfund site.
I spoke with a little more authority this time. Ozzy! He stopped and glanced at his mother again, finally resting his eyes on his vehicle's dash. Mrs. Dobbs moved a little past the profile of her son and looked at me imploringly.
I apologize, Sheriff. Ozzy Jr.'s had a trying day, and I'm afraid his nerves are on end.
I allowed a commensurate amount of silence to pass. That's fine, Mrs. Dobbs. I studied the side of her son's face, but I think he was embarrassed to look up. I stepped back, calling for Dog to accompany me. I'll say something to Gio, Ozzy. His mother, unwilling to leave things unsettled and impolite, leaned across and called out to me,
How is your daughter, Sheriff?
I smiled and raised my voice to be heard over the diesel. Katie's fine, ma'am.
Still with a law firm in Philadelphia?
Yes, Mrs. Dobbs.
Betty, please, are we going to see you at the Red Hills Rancho Arroyo Survival Invitational this weekend?
As a reputable and highly visible member of the community, I received an invitation to the Goofy Golf Tournament every year, but since I wasn't even a fair-weather golfer, I always ignored it. The Red Hills Rancho Arroyo Survival Invitational was one of those midwinter golf tournaments where they played in parkas with optical orange golf balls, white not being a winter color for golf. I'd love to attend, but I don't golf, Betty.
Yes, but that lovely friend of yours does, she smiled. The Native American fellow?
Henry Standing Bear, he's Cheyenne. Even women in their 80s smiled at the thought of Henry. It was, as always, annoying. He's at my jail right now. Her forehead furrowed.
Oh, no.
Nothing professional. The pipes in both his house and where he works froze, so he needed a place to stay.
Doesn't he golf?
Yes, ma'am, he's a scratch player. I shrugged. He's good at everything.
He broke your nose, as I recall.
Eighth grade at the water fountain.
Didn't he go on to college?
Yes, ma'am, Berkeley. She nodded in remembrance.
I don't suppose you could convince him to play. The benefits from this year's tournament are going to the American Indian College Fund, and it would be wonderful if we could have a Native American participate.
I waved, trying to indicate that the conversation was ending. Well, when I get back to the office, I'll mention it to him. She continued to smile, but Ozzy pressed the button for the window. Mrs. Dobbs sat back as he put the truck in reverse, and I saw that Sizer Pretoria and Gio were walking side by side down the inner road, the Basco still holding the cooler under his arm, his hat now functioning as a makeshift mask. About 50 yards away, Gio said something to my deputy, and they parted company, Sancho toward me, and the dump man, still holding the rifle, toward the scales. I leaned against the grill guard on my truck and watched the young man approach with a slight hitch in his step and a general attitude of dissatisfaction. He reminded me of me. He pulled up about 2 steps away and lodged the web of his thumb over the butt of the 17-shot Beretta at his hip.
All right, I set a preliminary grid with the twine, but I gotta tell you that in my learned opinion the thumb arrived in the cooler and we have nothing to gain by digging up the surrounding area.
I crossed my arms and nodded. You don't think we're going to find the rest of him out there, huh?
No. And Mr. Stewart says there hasn't been anything disturbed in that area for a couple of weeks now. And given the fragile nature of the container, he squeezed the cooler till it squeaked. I'd say it's a new arrival.
He studied me. Is digging up the entire dump in the freezing cold for the next 2 weeks going to be my punishment for leaving? I ignored him and asked another question.
You going to check the permits for the weekend?
Yeah. The place is closed on Sunday, so it had to arrive either late Friday or Saturday.
Well, get the paperwork from Gio, and we'll...
I was interrupted by a series of shouts coming from the direction of the scales. I turned in time to see the scarecrow figure of Gio Stewart, with a .22 rifle held at port arms, standing on the scales in front of Ozzy Jr.'s truck. The developer gunned the engine on the vehicle to impress his intentions upon the dump man, even going so far as to lurch the one ton forward so that the chrome grill guard was almost touching him. Butch and Sundance were leaping in the air in an attempt to gain enough purchase to burst through the office plexiglass. I held up a finger to the Basco. "Just a second, I'll be back in a minute." I hustled across the broken ground, raised a hand and shouted, "Hold on, hold on!" I guess they couldn't hear me, or maybe it was that they just didn't want to, but Gio didn't retreat, and I could see his mouth moving in response to what looked like Ozzy's spitting tirade. I was about 30 yards away when the truck lurched again and the junk man was thrown backward. Gio hit the railroad tie ramp with a liquid thump, and his head cracked against the hard surface of the creosote-soaked wood, the rifle falling to the side with the chakow sound that indicated it had gone off. At his discharge, the truck stopped, but as near as I could tell, it was still in gear. "Put that thing in park!" I scrambled forward. Dog was beside me now and was barking. I could see where the round had glanced off the windshield, cracking the glass and shearing a deep groove through the trim in the front of the cab. I placed a hand on the elevated sill of the driver's window, reached in through the narrow opening, turned off the motor, and snatched the keys from the ignition. "Are you two all right?" Ozzy didn't move, but his mother, pale and breathless, replied, "We're fine, but what about George?" I slipped from the door and moved to the front of the truck where Gio was stretching his neck to one side as he lay there on the ramp. He was feeling the back of his head. I kneeled down and supported him, and his hat fell back, exposing the waxy, pure white skin where the sun had never touched him. "Are you okay?" He closed his eyes and then stretched them open, alternately flexing his jaw. "Gio, are you all right?"
"Ooh-yeah!"
He moved his mouth with the fog from his breath condensing in the frigid air, and then drew a hand up to swipe the saliva from the corner of his mouth before it froze.
"I didn't shoot nobody, did I?"
I smiled down at him. "Just the truck, but I think it'll make it." We both chuckled. Dog was standing by the scales and barking at the wolf mutts that were now taking turns jumping against the window. I did a little barking of my own. "Enough!" He quieted down, and my eyes drifted past to Sizer Pretoria, who stood with the cooler and evidence kit at his feet where he'd dropped them. His sidearm was drawn, and even from this distance I could see his hands shaking. I watched him until he became aware of me. He half-turned, lowering the Beretta. Betty Dobbs was out of the truck and now crouched beside the shaken junkman, who looked up at her and smiled brilliantly from beneath the dirt and whiskers.
"Are you all right? I didn't shoot you, did I?"
She laughed and shook her head at him. I cleared my throat and started to stand. "Betty, could you keep an eye on him for just a second?" She smoothed his hair back, and I figured George was in better hands. "I'll be right back." As I stood, I became aware that Ozzy Dobbs, Jr. had tried to open his truck door, but that the railing and the scale had him pinned.
"Did you see that? That crazy son of a bitch tried to shoot us!"
He was still spitting, and his chiclet teeth showed in a thin-lipped grimace. Remembering Dobbs' keys were still in my palm, I stuffed them into my pocket and held a hand out to silence him. "Stay where you are." He looked around, unable to see Betty or Gio at the front of the truck.
"Where's my mother?"
"She's taking care of the man you just tried to run over." I turned my back to him and approached my deputy, all the while attempting to get a handle on the surge of adrenaline that continued to bottle rocket through my veins. The Basco hadn't moved and was still turned a quarter away from me with the pistol at the side of his leg, his upper lip trapped between his teeth. "You all right?" He didn't say anything. "Are you all right?" He strained to speak. "Yeah." I looked back to make sure I was the only one who had witnessed him drawing his weapon. I turned to Sancho and gestured gently toward the semi-automatic. "You want to holster that thing?" "Yeah, yeah." As he secured the Beretta, I turned and saw the strangest thing I'd seen all day, and I'd seen a lot of strangeness up to this point. George Stewart and my ninth-grade English civics teacher were entwined
in a passionate kiss.
Chapter 3. Other than his long johns, how is he? Isaac blinked behind his thick glasses. He bruised a few ribs and cracked the back of his head. Personal hygiene notwithstanding, he's in remarkable shape for a man his age. He's had a rough day. It says a lot for hard work in the fresh air. I'm not so sure that would strictly define the environs of the dump. Municipal solid waste facility. Evidently, Geo had educated the doc, too. To each man his own paradise. I rolled my eyes. Well, since we're on a subject literati, have you seen the moving finger writes and having writ?
I have.
The Basco was talking to Janine at the end of the hallway, so Isaac leaned in closer and, speaking sotto voce, looked up at me.
Walter, you know as well as I do that that thumb is probably the result of some local cowboy having dallied up a little too quick at one of this weekend's team ropings.
In February?
He adjusted his glasses.
Have you forgotten how many indoor arenas we have in the surrounding area?
I studied my boots and went to one of my recorded responses.
Well, we're checking all the leads.
He made an exasperated sound in the back of his mouth. It was in a cooler with crushed beer cans and melted ice from the IGA. Maybe it hitchhiked there. I got a smile out of him with that one. I don't think we're being overly zealous in treating this as a possible missing person, or part of a missing person.
Walter, this was some roper squeezing his finger off, putting it in the cooler for safekeeping, and then getting so drunk that he either passed out or simply forgot about it. He's probably woken up this morning and realized he's missing a digit.
Thumb.
The intensity in his deep-set eyes increased.
And we'll probably be in here later to consolidate the damage.
He paused and took a breath.
Now, do you want to tell me what sort of criminal conspiracy this is in which you are attempting to involve me?
I glanced back toward the front desk, pushed off the wall, and draped an arm around Doc Bloomfield's narrow shoulders to steer him toward a little more privacy.
You've been working with the Basco on his recovery since the knifing?
He nodded.
Yes?
How's he doing? The doc paused.
In what spirit is this question asked?
How about physical? We'd walked to the end of the hall and were now confronted with a set of double swinging doors that led to the ICU. I stopped and retrieved the majority of my arm, but left a hand on the doc's shoulder.
The initial damage was the penetrating wound 6 inches to the right of the midline, with an extending incision and hemorrhagic effect that included the left perinephric fat and the kidney itself. The organ suffered a 95% loss in its filtering abilities and was removed, but the other kidney will most likely continue to operate at peak efficiency, especially because the young man is in inordinately fine physical condition.
Yep, but how's he doing?
Isaac propped an elbow on his arm and cupped his chin in his hand.
Well, there was some additional infection that seems to have affected the left oblique muscles, but other than that, he's fine.
I nodded, but didn't say anything.
But that's not really the part of him you're worried about, is it?
Not really.
He's exhibiting some psychological neurosis?
I don't know if I'd call it neurosis.
A smile softened his face.
What would you call it, then?
Back in the day, Lucian used to refer to it as bullet fever. He exhaled a gentle laugh at the thought of my old boss, who had been the previous sheriff of Absaroka County.
And what exactly are the symptoms of bullet fever?
Numerous. The first being a strong urge to find something else to do for a living. Preferably in an occupation where people aren't trying to slice you, dice you, and julienne fry you.
Sounds sensible.
Nobody ever said it was a sane line of work, Doc. I sighed.
He's a good kid. Tough and brave as a summer day. I just think this is the first time he's ever gotten a good look into the abyss.
And he's maybe brought a little of it back with him.
It sounds as if this condition might be familiar to you.
I nodded and smiled.
Yep, I had a little dose or two.
The doc shook his head, mildly scolding. All right, what is it you're planning to do?
Well, whether he stays or goes, I want to make sure he knows he's all right. In the long run, it's best for him to learn that he's not bulletproof. I just want to remind him that he might be just a little bullet-resistant.
And how are you intending to do that?
I took a deep breath and tipped my hat back.